Afternoon to my colleagues on the Senate Rules Committee. We're going to begin the Senate, bless you, the Senate Rules Committee. On Senate Rules Committee, it is Wednesday, August 26th, about 1:46, 1:47 p.m. Approximately. I want to welcome to those folks in the audience. We have three appointments that are before us today. We have Mr. Gary Reed, a member of the Community College Board of Governors, as well as Pamela, and I hope I pronounce this correctly, Allen or Allen? Allen, and we have Stephanie Clendon. Clendon? Clendon. I'll get it correctly when I get you up here. Okay, so why don't we start with Mr. Gary Reed. But before we do that, why don't we establish a quorum, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella?
Here.
Cannella here. Leyva?
Here.
Leyva here. Mitchell?
Here.
Mitchell here. Fuller?
Here.
Fuller here. De Leon?
Here.
De Leon here.
Okay, fantastic. We've established a quorum. Mr. Gary Reed, please, welcome. If there's anyone that you'd like to introduce, any loved ones, family members, please do so. Take an opportunity.
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, Mr. Reed, why don't you issue out a brief statement, and then we'll begin some questions and commentaries from the members of the Rules Committee.
Okay. Well, thank you again for having me here this afternoon. I'm looking forward to being confirmed. I've been on the board since 2005. I've certainly learned a lot as a board member, having been a school teacher in my earlier life. I've learned a lot about higher education, certainly, since coming to the board, and we're doing some exciting things at the community college level, and I'd like to continue serving and seeing some of those projects completed.
Okay, thank you very much. It was a very, very brief, but no complaints.
I can go on.
No complaints. No complaints here. No complaints here. Why don't we start off with Madam Vice Chair, Ms. Fuller.
Thank you. Mr. Pro Tem and members, I want to express my support for this confirmation. Mr. Reed has been serving on the Community College Board of Governors and doing a fine job. In my area, everybody is very happy with him, and he has extensive business background, especially in financial matters. He started his business career with a degree from Porterville Community College, so we think he knows a lot about the system. And he's put in some great experience. And there's a lot more things I could say about him, but I think we'd all like this to be a brief meeting today. And we really appreciate his service, and I totally support him. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Vice Chair. Why don't we go with Ms. Leyva?
No questions, Mr.
Pro Tem. Okay, fantastic. Mr. Cannella?
No questions.
Okay, and Ms. Mitchell?
No questions.
You must have impressed so much, you know, Mr. Reed.
I enough, appreciate the no questions.
Enough that you must have been vetted out so well that there's not one single flaw or blemish in your background. No. You know, so.
I don't want to go that far.
Okay, we have no questions or commentaries from the members. Can I get a second?
Someone?
We have a motion. Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. We were going so quickly with this. For those in support of Mr. Reed's nomination, I'm seeing no support for you, Mr. Reed, at this moment. For those in opposition to Mr. Reed, I'm also seeing no opposition. Those who may be agnostic and don't care about Mr. Reed, I see that. Okay, I see that. Well, you have an affirmative support here by Ms. Mitchell. She cares right there. Okay, with that, we do have a second by Madam Vice Chair, Ms. Fuller. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella?
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva?
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell?
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Fuller?
Aye.
Fuller, aye. De Leon?
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
All right. Your nomination passes, Mr. Reed, on a 5-0 vote. Congratulations. Fantastic. Colleagues, we have two other nominations before us, B and C. That is Pamela Allen. For Director of the Department of State Hospitals, as well as Ms. Stephanie Clendon, the Deputy Chief Deputy Director of the Department of State Hospitals. Why don't you introduce yourself with a statement? If there's anyone that you want to introduce, please do so, and then we'll go to your statement, and if you could please follow as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to introduce my husband of 27 years, John. Is it with
me joining today, and also my parents. Welcome. I have Rich and Linda Griffith, and my mother, Sarah Polanco.
Oh, they're here. Where are they? Where are they at?
Okay, raise your hand. Where's my husband?
Oh, okay. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Okay.
My three
oh,
sons.
That's not your husband. Oh, that's your husband. Okay, I see. I see him. Okay, I got you. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Our three children are in school today.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
Have other obligations. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman and members. I want to thank you for the opportunity today for being considered for the confirmation of the director of the Department of State Hospitals. I've enjoyed my 24-year career with the state of California, with the past 10 years of the department, with the Department of Mental Health, now referred to as the Department of State Hospitals. The experience I bring to the director's role goes back to being appointed as an executive director at one of the state hospitals, deputy director of strategic planning for DSH, and also my last year was as chief deputy director for the Department of State Hospitals, which now Stephanie has assumed that role. As the director, I will continue my efforts towards improving safety within the hospitals while providing innovative and evidence-based treatment standards to all patients that we serve. I look forward to our future and appreciate the challenge and opportunities ahead of us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Clendenin?
Clendenin.
Clendenin. Clendenin. Ms. Clendenin.
It's hard. Even I have trouble sometimes. So I'd like to introduce my husband of 25 years, David Clendenin, and our two beautiful children, Brandon and Brittany Clendenin, who are both students at Sacramento State and also our student assistants with CalHR and the Energy Commission. And then I also have my very loving and supporting parents, Ron and Jennifer Bowles, with me as well.
Oh, nice to meet you both. Nice to meet you both. Please proceed.
So thank you very much. It's an honor to be here today as you consider confirming me for the position of Chief Deputy Director for the Department of State Hospitals. It has been a privilege to join the State Hospitals team. We have an extremely talented leadership team and very passionate and dedicated staff committed to providing care and treatment for California's most mentally ill population. I bring to this position both administrative and policy experience, having served as Chief Deputy Director for the Office of Statewide Health Planning and Development, and having held positions as Chief Fiscal Officer, Chief Information Officer, and Deputy Director of Administrative Services. Additionally, my time with the Office of Statewide Health Planning and Development, where our focus was on health workforce development, on health facilities construction, and healthcare data collection, research, and outcomes reporting, provided a strong foundation that acknowledged that aligns with much of the issues that we deal with at the state hospital system. As Chief Deputy Director, I am committed to working with Director Allen and our team to continue building upon our successes and to advance the department in the areas of safety, treatment, and responsibility.
Thank you much, Ms. Clendenin. Thank you much both, as well as Ms. Allen. So we're going to open up for questions and commentaries from the members. May we start off with Ms. Mitchell?
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to start with Director Allen, because at least for me as a Rules Committee member, having the unique opportunity of been a part of the confirmation hearing process when you were being confirmed for your job as Clendenin, and it was in recent history. And so there's some issues that I think have some carryover. You know, but for me, as you move into the director position, it requires, I think, from our perspective, from the legislature's perspective, you know, a different level of kind of vision and leadership, particularly of a troubled state department, a new state department born out of a need for improvement. I'm sure you would agree. So talk to me a little bit about how you see your role shifting from a more operational position into now the department head of, I think you mentioned to me yesterday, 12,000 employees?
That is correct.
Tell me from your perspective the difference for you.
Well, as you said, going from an operational implementation role of our entire system, I now have a holistic vision of our whole department. It is a entire operation in making sure that we strive towards our vision and our mission. And I think within that role, I have to maintain balance. And as an operational, you're implementing policies, procedures that your executive team and your body has gone ahead and approved. But now I need to make sure that as the deputy directors and as the directors of the state hospitals implement those policies, that we stay within a balanced system. And I think that's my role, is to make sure that I monitor it holistically, making sure that treatment balances with safety, which also balances with responsibility, which covers some of the areas that you talked, you say troubled, I say challenged, but we definitely have challenges ahead of us. And I am to keep our staff motivated by keeping that vision embedded into our policies and procedures as we implement and develop those, to make sure that our culture stays in a positive, safe environment, and make sure that they're aware of their surroundings and that I give them the resources and tools to do their job. It also is making sure that I identify and choose the right people to be the leaders within our organization, and again, providing the resources to do that, and then monitoring the system as a whole. And I think, looking back, and I've been 10 years with the Department of Mental Health, now State Hospitals, I can really see where our department had been unbalanced at times, which causes some of those challenges or troubled areas. And I think, as a leader and having that experience behind me, it's critical to make sure that we keep them, our processes that we set in place, to keep that balance. We need to go forward, but we can't go forward with one without the other. They're all intertwined. And I think my vision is to make sure that that occurs in that manner.
If I could ask you questions in two areas, some of the historical fiscal challenges as outlined by LAO reports and state audits, and then secondly, some of the more recent Coleman suit challenges. So first of all, with regard to fiscal, what improvements would you say the department, specifically under your leadership, has made to its budget process, and are there any additional challenges that you anticipate?
First of all, I have Stephanie Clendenin as my chief deputy director, and also we have a new administrative deputy who also has an extensive background in administrative services. Under my leadership, I come from an a budget background as well, hospital administration, and we've set up systems in place to really track the information. All of our budgets from our hospitals used to be done independently of one another. So now we have systems that are the same across all the hospital system. We have good leadership in each one of our accounting, auditing, budget analysts, data systems, and being able to display the data in a manner in which we understand, we monitor, and then we make sound decisions from, and we monitor those budgets and process budget material with data that supports our request. So that's the fiscal portion of it. In relation to the Coleman, as you probably most recently saw, there was a Coleman order that just recently came out from our new judge, Judge Mueller. And her concerns were to ensure that with new administration, new chief counsel, that we have a good understanding of the past 20 years of orders that lay upon the Department of State Hospitals. And she wanted to make sure that, one, we understood the orders and that what our requirements are as the Department of State Hospitals is to treat mentally ill prisoners within our system and in our psych programs. And also to make sure that we have a process that's a sustainable process, that even with turnover of leadership and management and executives in the hospitals, that continues on past our retirement. But so what we've done is we do have all the orders built into processes and those, and improve them on a continual basis. We ensure that the training's there. And then also we have the Attorney General's office who oversees us implement those processes, and their knowledge is shared as well.
Well, my sense was that her comments were a little more forceful, where she stated that she really accused the department of, quote, willful backsliding on plans to eliminate the backlog of seriously mentally ill prisoners who are awaiting inpatient care, and talked about and juxtaposed that reality with hundreds of empty beds at your state facility. So could you address that point?
Yes. The part that I took from that, again, I did read that order, is that Tascadero State Hospital is required to have 256 available beds for low-level intermediate care mentally ill prisoners. Atascadero does not have a wait list for those beds. There's 149 of those 256 beds filled with low-level intermediate care. Where the wait list is for higher custody intermediate care beds.
And those beds you don't have in abundance?
I have zero available.
Okay.
Correct. So it's an order that allows us, I look at it as go up to there if the need is there. So within 30 days, we're preparing a report to specifically identify the different of the custody levels with the level of care as well.
So is there a strategy to address expanding bed capacity in the area clearly of greatest great need where you have the wait list?
Yes, we always monitor the expansion of capacity or conversion of capacity. We also look at our continuum of care for our treatment to ensure that we step down patients that may be in the high custody that may be ready to go to a lower custody. So we do have a proposed housing review plan that the special master and the plaintiffs are reviewing at this time, which adds to the original order of our housing plan that will give us a little bit more room clinically to step patients down as well.
And I think finally for you, Director, what's on the horizon from your perspective? What's, you know, the major, I think, issue that you look forward to tackling as the new director to really improve safety, improve the life experience of those within your charge, as well as the employees under your direction?
With our department, there isn't a instant remedy for many of the challenges that we face. If we want to make change within our facility, we have to make sustainable changes that can last, and they have to be evidence-based driven. We are making incremental changes, system changes within our department, with the environment, with treatment, with assessment, and with data collection. And those are the four prongs within our approach to bringing our department forward. With that, we're looking at improving treatment protocols, which then reduces length of stay, which gives us, in fact, more bed capacity. We've expanded our capacity within our walls. We're looking and reaching out into our communities and looking for capacity to treat some of our patient populations in such as the jail-based programs that we started implementing this year or expanding this year. We're also looking at expanding our conditional release programs that are out in the community and looking at capacity beyond our walls. So that's one thing that we're challenged with and continually look for solutions every day. Another area is the safety, and as you know, our facilities, we self-disclose that there's a lot of violence within our hospital setting for our staff and our patients. I mean, we don't. When I look at safety, I don't think of it just for our staff to come in. Those are our patients' homes, so they have to be safe and feel comfortable living there as well. So we need to improve the safety, and that's a continual effort that we push forward. And again, we do assessments to understand our patient population a little bit better, and then again, using the data to make those decisions to go forward with system changes.
Thank you. Moving on to Ms. Clendenin, and I understand the difference really in the two positions is that you really have the operational responsibility where you actually oversee the five state hospitals, the psychiatric programs, et cetera. So piggybacking off of the director's comments with regard to safety, is there any additional information you want to share in that you have direct oversight over the state hospitals with regard to strategies that the department is implementing to both improve safety while maintaining kind of the ultimate goal of providing care in the least restrictive setting?
Certainly, thank you. So we actually are focusing on violence in four different areas. We focus on it from a treatment perspective, we focus on it from a data perspective, from environment, and as well as patient assessments. There is a lot of efforts going on in each one of those four prongs approach. From the assessment side of things, our clinicians are now performing, as Director Allen discussed, are performing risk assessments on each one of our patients so that we can better make decisions about their treatment. On the environment side, we are we have recently implemented the personal duress alarm systems that's currently operational in each one of our four hospitals, and the fifth hospital will go live at the beginning of 2016. And that's a system that allows our staff to be able to pull on a device and allows for our response team to be able to know exactly where they are in the hospital and to be able to respond quicker. We also were approved in this most recent budget to build out an enhanced treatment program, which allows us to build a unit within four of our hospitals that really balances safety and treatment and provides for a higher security treatment area for those individuals who are at the most risk of violence within our hospitals. We also are focused on treatment. Our clinicians have developed the California Violence Assessment Treatment Program. It's the CalVET guidelines, and have published that in a peer-reviewed journal. And so we're now focusing our treatment based on the type of violence that patient is at risk for. So there's a lot of efforts going. Like I said, we're focusing on it from all different areas.
You mentioned the additional beds in your facilities. Is that a conversion of existing beds into a higher category, for lack of a better term, or is that construction and expansion of your capacity, your bed capacity?
For those, it would be conversion.
A conversion. Mm-hmm. Does that address your wait list in terms of the category of where you have the wait list?
So on the wait list, we have a wait list for incompetent to stand trial patients.
Okay.
And we were actually approved also in the budget some funding to expand our secured treatment area at the Metropolitan State Hospital. So we will be constructing a secure treatment fence around one of the buildings that currently services the Lantrim and Petra Short patients, mm-hmm. so that we have the opportunity to meet the needs of whatever population we have when that fence is constructed.
Final question, Mr. Pro Tem, thank you. There have been allegations with regard to the department's treatment of the incompetent to stand trial category of patients. What steps have you taken to address some of those allegations?
By allegations, do you mean just from the wait list and the
ACLU lawsuit?
Okay.
All of those.
Okay. So what has happened is over the recent years, we have seen a significant increase in referrals of incompetent to stand trial patients to the state hospital system. Mm-hmm. We have been as a result of that, we saw a significant increase in our wait list for a bed for that population. And as a result, we have been focusing in a number of areas to try to address that wait list. And the ACLU's lawsuit is around how long it is taking for incompetent to stand trial patients to be admitted to the hospital. Mm-hmm. So we have been approaching this from a number of different directions. One is bed expansion. So we've added I think over 300 beds to the state hospital system in the last couple of years, and have been approved in this current budget to activate another 105 beds, and are currently in the process of activating those beds now. We also have, over the last couple of years, developed jail-based competency treatment programs because we are reaching maximum capacity at our hospitals. So to expand that capacity, we've partnered with the counties and the sheriffs and are now providing treatment in the jail setting. So that allows us to be able to provide treatment to lower acuity patients, and then move the higher acuity patients into the state hospital system. We also, working with the governor's office, convened an IST work group with all the stakeholders to really look at different ways, different things that we could do to address it that isn't just around capacity. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we process the treatment of ISTs in a more efficient and effective manner? And out of that came a couple of pieces of legislation that assisted us with the flow and treatment of ISTs. We've also implemented a patient management unit that's helping us not only with our incompetent to stand trial patient, but also basically all of our different commitment types to really manage the flow of patients in and out of our system as well. So just kind of looking at it from an operational perspective within our state hospitals to see how we can move the patients through quicker. So a lot of different strategies that we are using to try to get those wait lists down.
Well, I appreciate the time we spent with both of you yesterday. This is an issue that I have the opportunity to engage in annually as a budget committee member. I remember the discussions over the safety devices for the employees there, and you know, look forward to continuing to be updated on progress you're making. Because as I said, it's still a relatively new department, 2012, dealing with really critical issues as both an employer and a service provider. You know, it's a different population than any other state agency is servicing or trying to provide, you know, safe services to. And so I look forward to continuing to have the conversation on an ongoing basis as we come through the budget cycle about the progress you're making against the LAO report, against the audit, in meeting the needs of the court to make sure that, you know, safety first, least restrictive environment. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pro Tem. I had an opportunity to interview both these individuals yesterday, and I'm impressed with their knowledge of the department. And I was interested, I was looking at your resume, Ms. Clendenin, and you started in 1990 as a office assistant, and today you're, you know, up for the chief deputy director. I think that's a pretty neat opportunity to grow within state government, mm-hmm. and I know we certainly appreciate people that spend their careers in state government and continue to grow, so congratulations to you for that. I'm looking forward to supporting both of you today. I'm still struck, though, by after our discussion, I thought about more about the continuing acts of violence against really the staff, I mean, and the patients as well, but these folks don't make a ton of money that work in these hospitals. They make a decent wage, but just to have to be concerned about their personal safety every day when you have, you know, 16 acts of violence on average per day. And I think you are doing what you can at this point. You got the GPS, you know, necklaces that they're wearing or the whatever they're called. But I still think you have to do more. And I was struck by when you talked about these rooms and your ability to lock the rooms. I think Senator Mitchell mentioned it. And I asked, well, how long is it going to take to do this? And you said it's going to take 3 years. I thought, my gosh, that is such a long time to implement these safety measures for the staff and for the patients as well. And I don't think it's your fault. I don't think you would probably do it faster if you could. So in the light of keeping everybody safe, if there's a way we can do it faster, you have to let us know. If there's legislation that needs to be done to faster, I mean, because 3 years is just ridiculous. I mean, that is really... That's state government. That's what everybody complains about, getting things done when it takes 3 years to make modifications to a hospital that could save lives and would save lives, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think it's on both of you to bring those proposals forward to us. And so if there's something that we have to do, you have to let us know, because I think everybody's very motivated to keep the staff safe and keep the patients safe as well. So as you're doing all the other things with the $1.8 billion that your budget is, take some time to please come up with some proposals that can be done in faster than 3 years, because that's really unacceptable when we're talking about people's lives. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cannell, did you want any feedback or just commentary?
Well, we talked. It was really just me.
Okay, that's
we
fine.
We talked yesterday.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Cannell. Madam Vice Chair.
We had a great discussion. We've visited before, and at least with Ms. Allen, and I'm in support, and I have no questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Vice Chair. Ms. Leyva.
Thank you, Mr. Pro Tem. Good afternoon, Madam Director, Madam Chief Deputy Director. I very much enjoyed meeting with both of you ladies. And first, thank you for being willing to do these very, very tough jobs. And my questions are kind of in line with what everyone has asked today about safety and regarding the police officers and the training that they receive. Despite hospital police officers recently receiving a recruitment and retention differential, they remain severely underpaid in comparison to agencies that you compete with to hire quality officers. Given that, do you have some long-term plans to address the ongoing salary shortcomings that likely impede the department from hiring quality and experienced officers, which would certainly help with the violence issues?
True. Did you want to take this one?
Certainly. To focus on the salary issue first, we did successfully get approved the ability to provide a recruitment and retention differential to our hospital police officers statewide. So that was, I think, a significant step in helping to address some of the salary differential. Unfortunately, we don't, as director and chief deputy director, we don't have control over pay. Specifically, it is addressed in bargaining. So what we can do as director and chief deputy director is really to focus on how do we look at recruitment and retention efforts to try to help recruit hospital police officers and try to and provide them an environment, a working environment in which they want to stay with us, so make it attractive to come to work. One of the things that we've been focused on in the last year is we've developed a strategic plan that focuses on five pillars of a effective law enforcement agency, focusing on recruitment and retention of quality hospital police officers, providing consistent training, ensuring that there's consistent accountability for our hospital police officers, ensuring that we have consistent statewide policy for all of our law enforcement personnel, and then also ensuring that we are providing for supervisor and management development of our law enforcement. So we have a pretty robust strategic plan that addresses each one of those areas, and working towards those goals, we have established, we have a chief of law enforcement now in Sacramento. We have an Office of Protective Services in Sacramento that focuses on establishing professional standards, policy and compliance, focusing on and recommending best practices across the statewide law enforcement team, which is an improvement because in recent years, we had five independently operating law enforcement structures, and so now they are all operating as one law enforcement structure under the guidance of our chief of law enforcement, as well as the Health and Human Services Agency's new Office of Law Enforcement Support as well.
Okay, good. It sounds like it's on your radar. It is also my understanding that police officers at the Department of Developmental Services, like most police officers, are required to be trained at the Commission on Peace Officers Standard and Training, post basic level. However, the state hospitals, I understand, do not receive that training. Is there a plan to include them in that training, or is there a reason why they don't get that training?
So they, while they do not attend an external post-certified academy, we do have a police academy for our hospital police that it's based on the 43 domains of police training. So it follows along that same kind of standard of training, with the exception of a few that we've pulled out because they don't necessarily apply to the population that we serve. As an example, vehicle accidents. They really don't need to know how to investigate vehicle accidents. So we pulled those domains out and increased the training on things like mental health, providing policing for mental health. So we do have a police academy that they attend. It is now, as of this year, we are standardizing that police training, so all of our new recruits are attending that police academy. We have also been working on identifying what the standards are training for all levels of our law enforcement so that they will have consistent ongoing training and refresher training of their perishable skills as well.
Very good. Thank you both very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Leyva. For those, we're going to go for those who are in support. If they want to testify on behalf of the two nominees or either nominee, please come on up. Those in support, come on up. Thank you.
Mr. Pro Tem and members, Kobe Pizzotti with the California Association of Psychiatric Technicians. And I just wanted to say I've known Pam for 9 years now and Stephanie for about a year, back when she started at the Coalinga State Hospital and I was working with a different union on different issues, but I just wanted to say that our members are probably the largest direct level care providers in all of the state hospital system. We have 3,500 psychiatric technicians in state hospitals. We work in prisons, state hospitals, and developmental centers. I can say this without fail, that these two are the only two directors that will actually call me up and ask me, I want to know what the rank and file think. They have an open door policy that is beyond reproach. I mean, they really want to know what is going on besides what their managers are telling them. And that is something that we, you know, absolutely love and support wholeheartedly. So that is one thing that I say is phenomenal about these two. The other is that back when I started doing state hospital work, Director Mayberg was in place, and there was roughly about 35 to 3,700 assaults on staff a year. Then Director Allenby came in, and the numbers started going down because of the policies that he made. Now that Director Allen's in there, last year there was 2,700 assaults on staff. So we're seeing a downward trend with the policies and positions that they've, you know, that they've made. So I think that goes to Ms. Mitchell and Mr. Canella's questions that they've had. So I think there are definitely things that will come to you and tell you that that need to take place in the state hospitals to make them safer, but I can't think of two better candidates for this position.
Right, thank you. Thank you much. Next witness in support.
Good afternoon. Mark Vittorio with Ask Me Local 2620. We represent psychologists, social workers, pharmacists, and a whole bunch of other healthcare professionals. We just want to stand in strong support today of both of these candidates. As Mr. Pizzotti said, the communication with this department has just been fantastic. We work with multiple departments across the state, and just their desire and willingness to consistently sit with us, to talk to us, hear what's going on, and share also their vision and ask for input is just phenomenal. And another big thing for us is just their concern on staff safety as well as recruitment and retention, all things that have been brought up today. So strong support of both candidates. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next witness in support.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Aaron McGuire on behalf of the California State Sheriff's Association. Senator Mitchell raised the issue about the incompetent stand trial wait list. We've been very pleased with the nominees and support their nomination. And are proud of the partnership that the sheriffs have with the Department of State Hospitals in terms of tackling that issue. And we look forward to continue working with them to reduce that backlog further. So thank you.
Thank you. Next witness in support.
Mr. Chair, Member Shane Levine on behalf of CSLEA, the California Statewide Law Enforcement Association, here in support of both Ms. Allen and Ms. Clinton-Denon. Appreciate your responses today. And we look forward to a very productive partnership moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Next witness in support.
Mr. Pro Tem members, Kate Bell with Capital Advocacy on behalf of Liberty Healthcare Corporation. We actually contract and have partnered with the department to do treatment for the initially released SVPs and also for the ISTs in the jail-based setting. I've had a good working relationship and look forward to that continuing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next witness in support.
Good afternoon, Mr. Pro Tem and members of the committee. My name is Frank Rufino. I'm the president and the CEO of the Association of California State Supervisors. I make it really sweet. We got two great public servants, and we fully support their appointment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I believe last witness in support.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Todd DeBronstein. I am the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Association of California State Supervisors, and we also stand in support of these two candidates.
Thank you much. Any other folks in support? Any other folks in support? Seeing none, those in opposition. Any folks in opposition? Come on up. Any folks in opposition? Oh, we have one person.
One person.
Yes.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Mr. Pro Tem. My name is Cherith Drescher. I'm here in to represent the views of Jeff Gambord, a patient at Coalinga State Hospital.
What is the name again, Jeff?
Jeff Gambord.
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 Gambord, okay.
And I did submit some documents that he put together that he would like the committee to review before they make a decision about the appointment of Ms. Allen. And we didn't really discuss
Ms. Clendenin.
Clendenin.
Yeah.
All right. I would perhaps represent more of the patients at Coalinga State Hospital. However, Mr. Gambord, who is an organizer of the patients in with regard to the conditions at the hospital, has been held in isolation for the last 17 months once it was discovered that he was in opposition to the confirmation of Ms. Allen. And we've been trying to negotiate with the hospital to try to get him out of this predicament, but and Ms. Allen is quite aware of the situation, and that is his record has been falsified. It's been written that he has threatened senators, and based on this threatening of senators, he was isolated from the rest of the population. And of course, this has been proven to be untrue. However, he remains isolated. He was involuntarily medicated. He is unable now to operate within the general population of patients so that they can confirm some of their concerns, which are, for example, the death of maybe 75 guys out of Coalinga State Hospital because of the problems with transportation, getting them to their medical appointments. And I find that the treatment, personally, I also oppose Ms. Allen if the treatment of Mr. Gambord is representative of what happens to people who disagree with her. And I note that there are very many people here who represent a staff who are very supportive of Ms. Allen. And I noticed that in her dealing with Mr. Gambord, she has always referred to staff. For example, she's asked the psychiatrist who wrote the false information into the file. How is it? And the psychiatrist says, well, it's fine. And so that's the end of the discussion. Nothing is done to investigate the true facts, to investigate the witnesses who are being misrepresented and written down in the file. So she's very loyal to her staff, maybe not to the patients, but certainly to the staff. And that really has been the problem in this case, is that the people, the administration continues to ask staff, how is it? What? We would ask, beg, please, talk to the witnesses. But that has never been done. So I find that there is a very defective procedure to fix wrongs. Mr. Gambord is asking that, well, he's being held now in this isolation because he's threatened legal action. He insists that he never threatened any senators, nor did he threaten his dentist, or all these reasons.
I'm going to give you about 60 seconds more, okay?
So okay, about 60 seconds. Ahead. Well, I have the documents that explain the situation. And I believe I can give them to the committee now.
Sure, you can give it to the sergeant right there.
The committee would look at this seriously because the staff is in good shape, but I can't say the same for the patients.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, any other folks in opposition? Any other folks in opposition? Seeing none, those who are neutral or don't have a position? Seeing none right now. Okay. We've had commentaries and questions already from the members, unless there's any other further questions from the members or commentaries. Seeing none, we've had the testimony. Yes, Ms. Mitchell.
I'm the nature of my question is not going to be with the specifics of this one patient. I don't think that's appropriate. But to respond generally in terms of how you as director, Chief Deputy Director, do engage if there is an infrastructure within your system where if there's an advocacy group where patients' perspectives can be directed to you unfiltered, for lack of a better term. If there's just an internal process, that would be helpful to know.
Thank you, and I appreciate not talking about a specific patient. The department takes all complaints seriously to ensure treatment is being provided at all the hospitals, which include inquiries, investigations, program and legal reviews, and also second clinical opinions from other clinicians outside the the hosting hospital. It also should be noted that the patients have many avenues to resolve their concerns and or complaints, which include the on-site patient's rights advocate, the executive director and medical director on-site, and also DSH in Sacramento has a human rights office, our office of law enforcement, and also the Department of Public Health, which reviews all complaints from patients.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments? Seeing none, why don't we have a motion so we can have a vote on this measure? And we, so it's noted for the record, we do have your documentation, ma'am, and our staff will review the documentation. If there's any further communication, if it heeds or warrants any further communication or investigation, obviously the staff will look into it and give a recommendation to the Rules Committee. But with that, we do have a motion before us by Madam Vice Chair, Ms. Fuller. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Fuller.
Aye.
Fuller, aye. De Leon.
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Okay, Ms. Allen and Ms. Clendenin, congratulations. Your nomination has been approved by the Rules Committee. You're welcome. All righty, folks, we still have business to conduct, so I'd ask if you, as you exit as quietly as possible and do so using the back door. Colleagues, we're going to file items number 2 through 6. File items number 2 through 6. If I can get a motion. We have a motion made by Madam Vice Chair. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Cannella.
Aye.
Cannella, aye. Leyva.
Aye.
Leyva, aye. Mitchell.
Aye.
Mitchell, aye. Fuller.
Aye.
Fuller, aye. De Leon?
Aye.
De Leon, aye.
Okay, files items number 2 through 6 pass on a 5-0 vote. Colleagues, before we adjourn today's Rules Committee, just very quickly, if I'd like to recognize and wish a very happy birthday to our own Jane Brown. And that's with that, today's Rules Committee is adjourned. Thank you very much.